welcome to the World Peace Diet Circle with our host, Dr. Will Tuttle. I'm your course coordinator, Steve Prusak, and let's welcome to the call right now, Dr. Will Tuttle.
Thanks, Steve. It's great to be with everybody here. And this is our fourth Thursday call for the month of August 2013, and it's actually, this is the third Thursday call, but it's actually the fourth Thursday because of Veganpalooza. So I want to invite everyone to just settle in and be with us here for this call. And it's great, actually. I'm really delighted to be able to do this with you all, that you are such a wonderful group, and I haven't had a chance with Veganpalooza and then heading out on the road here. We're heading up to Vancouver right now from Northern California to really follow what's been happening in the community forums like I normally do, but it's great to see all the activity there, the questions and comments and concerns and perspectives that you've been sharing there as well. And we've had a really full plate, haven't we, with Veganpalooza, the 45 people. We had about 30 main presenters, and then, or 29, I think. And then on top of that, we had about 15 people for the VIP program that we lined up. And so it was just great to be deluged with all these different insights and things from Veganpalooza. So before we just jump in to Steve and I are going to talk a little bit about some of the logistical things about our circle in a minute, but let's maybe just take a moment before we dive into that and just relax for a moment and just remember why we're here. And remember that we are focusing our intention on transforming our own lives and the life of the larger system that we're part of, our society, to be more in alignment with the universal teachings of compassion for all living beings and with the deeper awareness of health, how our health is interconnected with the health of others. That as we bless others, we are blessed, and that as we question the official stories of our culture, especially about animals and non-human animals and our treatment of them, then we'll begin to be such a powerful force, not only for healing for ourselves and our loved ones, but for healing our society and creating a world of abundance and celebration of our lives here on this beautiful planet. So let's just give thanks for everyone, not only the people here on the call with us now, all of you, but everyone who's connecting with this vision and who will connect with this vision, all those who have gone before us who have been part of this vision as well, and know that whatever effort we make, even if it seems like a small effort, it contributes to creating a world for our, not only a greater peace for ourselves, but for future generations. For our children and their children, and for the children of all living beings. So we give thanks knowing that through the momentum that is building in our society of compassion and awareness and consciousness around eating, around food, and around living in general, how we can consume in ways and live in ways that are less resource-intensive and violent and cruel to others, that we are actually sowing the seeds for our own happiness and for the happiness of everyone. So thank you all for being part of this, and we thank everyone who's part of this as well. We see this vast web of compassion and kindness and light that is growing on our planet, and we give thanks for that. And so it is. All right, so Steve is with us here in the beginning of the call tonight, and we're discussing, he was saying that, you know, he's got a lot of new possibilities happening for things he's doing. So, Steve, you want to tell everybody what you're thinking?
Right. So I've kind of talked to Dr. Tuttle about it, and just with my current vegan plate load, it's just really a lot these days, especially with a monthly vegan magazine and juicing message I'm trying to get out there and all the other work I'm doing. It's really become a lot to try to continue the circle and my role in it. And we've been doing this for 2 years, 4 months, that I've been working with Dr. Tuttle on the circle and coordinating the programs with him. But it's just at the point where the magazine's over a year old now, and I guess there's a reason Veg News is bi-monthly. It's a lot to do a monthly magazine, and I've really got to just pay all my attention on the work I'm doing now, which Dr. Tuttle understood in moving forward, so I was going to step down from working on the Circle.
Right. So basically, we'll be continuing. I have to figure out a way to do that with the technical part, because Steve does the technical part of that. And we'll just keep you posted. You know, we have your email addresses and everything. And so we'll let you know. I'm planning on continuing the Circle as we've been doing on the third Thursday of every month. And it may be in a different maybe different phone numbers that you call in on and all of that, or we may move to possibly a Google Hangout kind of scenario or something else. We'll see. But anyway, that's the changes. The old Zen thing is whatever has a beginning will have an ending. And so we just see that whatever happens, you know, when things change, and it only gets better. So I'm sure things will new doorways will open for everyone through this that are for the benefit of our movement and for each other and for ourselves. So thank you, Steve, and I'll give Steve a big hand. Thank you for your help over the years with this, and we'll just keep everyone posted as we go forward.
Great, thank you.
Great. Okay, well, so that's the news on that, and otherwise, you know, this is I think a wonderful opportunity that we have together to share our concerns, our questions, any celebrations perhaps that people have, or insights that you have that you'd like to share in a supportive forum. The World Peace Diet Circle is really designed really for two things primarily. One is as an opportunity for me, as the author of the World Peace Diet, to continue to be in touch with you, folks who are inspired by the World Peace Diet and would like to go deeper with it. So I'm always prepared to talk more about the ideas there and to I hate to use the word flesh, you know, flesh them out, but, you know, put more peach. We just had some peaches, so peach flesh on them. And so we can get the full, you know, see how they relate to our lives today. So that's one thing for me to sort of expound upon the ideas and make them perhaps more relevant and clear for everyone and so forth in ways that hopefully are meaningful and helpful for everyone who's listening. And the other main point is it's an opportunity for you to dialogue, for us to dialogue, for, you know, for all of us together to dialogue. So I'll just say this at the very beginning right now. Please feel free to press star 2 if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment or respond or have me not necessarily answer a question but respond to any question or comment that you have, and other people can too. We always have that possibility, and you can also, I think, on your it's set up so that you can type in any questions you might have, so you can type them in. If I think if you're at your computer, I'm just checking right now, and it looks like I don't see anything. And sometimes I forget to check there, but I'm going to try to remember as we go along to do that. But star 2 is really obvious when I'm looking at my computer screen. All right, so that's basically it. So feel free. It doesn't have to be anything necessarily related to what I'm talking about. It could be something unrelated if you'd like. But what I'd like to do here in the beginning. I think the big news for all of us, perhaps, is the Vegan Palooza, which just ended a few days ago, and I'm hoping that you've had a chance to perhaps listen to a few of those sessions along the way, and I totally understand that you haven't. I know we've all been very busy, but from my point of view, it was a great, really a vegan smorgasbord of perspectives on veganism, and why and how vegan living can transform our lives positively. We had some really, I thought, very insightful messages from a number of different people. And so what I'd like to emphasize, I think, right now is what I heard from some of the people who were listening, which is from the very beginning when we had the interview on Wednesday night with Dennis Kucinich, former congressman from Ohio for many years, really, I think for 16 years, something like that, who's a vegan, the only vegan ever to have served in Congress, and his wife, Elizabeth Kucinich. And the theme that kind of emerged from that conversation that I had with them, I think is very, very apropos to what we're working on with the World Peace Diet. And there were two main points I felt, and two anyway. One was the idea of light, the idea that when we're eating a plant-based diet, we're really eating light. We're eating the sunlight, in a sense, you know, sunlight, which is what plants do. Plants perform this. I don't think scientists understand how it happens. I know they don't. They don't really don't know how it happens. But anyways, they are able to convert light into matter, in a sense. I mean, into the substance of their plantly bodies and beings, and convert sunlight and rain and connecting, of course, with the earth and minerals in the earth to carbohydrates, to sugars, to lipids, to oils, to amino acids, to proteins. And so these three fundamental macronutrients that all animals basically require to survive are created directly by plants by light. So we're literally eating light. And the miracle of life and the beauty of life, it comes from the light of the sun and from the light of, I feel the sun represents this infinite love of the creator for his or her creation that is a manifestation of this infinite life. And the sense of natural sense of gratitude, I think, that we all feel being supported by the light of life. And going into a garden is always, I think, a well-tended, cared-for, and loved garden is a beautiful experience. And Madeline and I, now that we have a little place in Northern California where we see, I mentioned this, I think, during Vegan Palooza, the enormous abundance where we can buy a little zucchini plant, for example, for a few dollars and find that, you know, I don't know how you put a price on the zucchinis we've gotten out of there so far, but I'm sure it's, what do you think, Madeline, about $60, $100 maybe? I mean, it's like this one plant has become this gigantic zucchini machine. I mean, it's just churning out huge volumes of zucchinis. And same thing with tomatoes, kale, cucumbers, the same time we have so many cucumbers. So anyway, it's this enormous abundance that we're basically, life is cooperating with us here, and we're part of a celebration of life. And eating animal foods is essentially, as Dennis Kucinich said, you're eating darkness. You're eating, it's dark. I mean, the bloody flesh of animals and what requires the slavery and cruelty to them that's inherent in the process, owning them as beings, they're continually struggling to escape or somehow not be exploited and oppressed the way we do, and then we kill them and eat their flesh. So there's this enormous darkness, which is not only physical. We put the light out of their eyes when we put the knife into their bodies, and the light goes out, and then we eat of the darkness. We eat of death and destruction. But it's also, and we see this, you know, I mean, just driving up here, today, we've been driving from Northern California. We've made it up to Eugene, Oregon, over 2 days. We spent last night in Mount Shasta, driving up here yesterday and driving up here again today along Route 5. You know, I think if you have a trained eye, it's more obvious. But everywhere we see huge amounts of water being used to cultivate and irrigate grain, which is not going into gardens. It's not a garden for creating vegetables and fruits. It's basically genetically engineered corn and soybeans, or perhaps grass sometimes, if there's cows out there in it. But huge amounts of water, precious water, that's in many ways become the new oil. It's become it's become really, you know, we don't have enough. I mean, there's serious problems with water in Northern California and in Oregon, and throughout many of the states, and livestock production is the cause of it. But the point I'm making here is that there's this enormous devastation as well as the dark, not only the darkness of cruelty to the animals, but the darkness of living in a way on this earth that doesn't care about the cruelty to animals and the devastation of ecosystems and the stealing of habitat for wildlife. And so huge areas now, as we could see as we were driving up here, have been cut down, the trees have been cut down, everything's been ruined except for allowing some grain to grow that's put in these metal, kind of ugly metal buildings. And then, of course, the animals are typically confined in similarly ugly metal buildings where they're fed this so-called food. And so it's ugliness everywhere compounded. And as we see this, and think of the opportunity cost of that, the fact that this water could be allowed to stay in the rivers and would be so much better for the fish, it would be so much better for the oceans, which are now getting water that's extremely contaminated. They're not getting the water that they used to get, and we're having large dead zones in the ocean because of all of the water so polluted now that's going into the oceans because it's coming off of these fields that are the pesticide dumping grounds. As corporations understand that they can genetically engineer crops requiring more pesticides, and that all ends up in the water. So we see a system that multiplies devastation on every level. People eat these products and need drugs. The drugs end up in the water as well. We find fish and other animals with strange birth defects and so forth from taking in all these drugs, plus people are taking them in as well. These drugs don't really, it's very hard to filter them out. So there's so many levels of this, and it's the darkness, essentially, as I heard him saying it, and it's something that is also dark because it's something that we do not want to have the light of our awareness on. It's something that as soon as we shine the light of our awareness on it, we wouldn't do it anymore. We'd say, what are we doing? It's almost like we're acting in as a society like somnambulists, you know, like we're just sleepwalking through motions that we have been programmed to do. And so it's the darkness in the sense of being asleep, being unconscious, being unaware, harming animals, putting out the light of their lives, putting out the light of the joy of creation, of ecosystems that normally would be celebrating life with abundance. And so that as an unfortunate side effect of this, we human beings have become by far the single most devastating force on the planet to such a degree that the greatest blessing that could probably happen to the world today would be if human beings simply disappeared off the planet by some miracle. Then the ecosystems would heal, and then the waters would be replenished and would be purified naturally, and the climate would stabilize, obviously, again, and animals would be able to be free from this terrible war against them where we're killing them because they're interfering with animal agriculture or because we want to eat them. And we're seeing this huge appetite to eat animals. Just since I wrote The World Peace Diet, just in the last 3 or 4 or 5 years, the appetite for eating animals has really increased dramatically. And unfortunately, not only aquatic animals the populations are being completely obliterated now by animal agriculture to the point where it's become just, everyone knows, I think it was at all aware, that the oceans are in danger of dying, basically, being taken over by jellyfish and coral reefs, which are the most life-intensive parts of the oceans, are dying at a very rapid rate, too, because of the acidification of the ocean, which is, again, directly connected to animal agriculture, to the pollution and runoff, as well as the warming of the oceans, as well as the fact that there's not enough fish in the oceans, and that also causes acidification, scientists now realize. And so the darkness of animal agriculture is more than just the cruelty to animals for food. It's also the cruelty to our own bodies, the cells, how they suffer from the toxins in animal agriculture, the cruelty to our minds in the sense we're eating the suffering, the cruelty also to the ecosystems and the darkness, the cost of the ecosystems, the devastation of that, And then also the darkness in the sense that our intelligence is reduced, because when we bring the light of awareness to something like this, then we would be able to change it. But since we don't bring the light of awareness, we keep it in the dark. And there's this whole emphasis on keeping everyone in the dark. We don't want anyone to know about this sense of darkness with the ag-gag bills and just with everything in general. And then the other thing I was mentioning is that Dennis Kucinich was talking about how the earth is an Eden. And this is the basic true nature of the earth. It's abundant. It's of benevolence and life and beauty. And the religions of the world are teaching the same thing about our true nature, that it's essentially of wisdom and compassion. And so we have a program that's injected into all of us that is of the nature of darkness, and primarily through food. And the greatest gift we can give ourselves and others is to awaken from this program, to see what's really happening underneath the surface of our food choices and our mistreatment of animals for food, to bring our lives more into alignment with the light, and not only by eating of the light, but of understanding and shedding and bringing out the light of our consciousness to the situation here, and then sharing this light. You know, you've probably all been to rituals of some kind or another where it's dark in the room, but everybody has a candle, and then one person lights one candle, and then that candle goes to one other candle, and pretty very rapidly, as people start lighting each other's candle, the room becomes filled with light. And so this is the kind of movement we're hoping, I feel, to bring to our world, the light of wisdom and compassion and health and kindness, by sharing it with each other. And the other emphasis that I made at the very end was that I don't think anyone perhaps knows why we are born onto a planet, into a society, where the leaders and the powers that be seem to be so bent on violence towards the earth and towards the people and towards animals, and how we're essentially brought into in a sense forced to participate in this system. We don't know why that is, I don't think exactly. I mean, maybe some of you have an idea. I think I have some ideas about it, but it's very difficult to perhaps trace it back through the centuries. But in the World Peace Diet, it seems clear that it was in the beginning, when we started animal agriculture, we began having the first slavery, the first war, the first arising of a wealthy elite class that dominated the rest of the society and got wealthy basically through war and domination. And we're still in that society today. And so instead of devolving into greater and greater cruelty, because the technology we have really gives us the capacity nowadays to enslave everyone directly and indirectly, and to destroy the earth in a massive way. And I'm happy if anyone wants to go into that more, the so-called Venus, I think it's called the Venus syndrome, or the Venus, I can't remember, the Venus, what happened to Venus could happen to us. There's more and more scientists apparently now coming forth and saying that it looks like Venus at one point was a vibrant planet with water and life, but for some reason got overheated, and now there's really nothing living there. And scientists are saying that, you know, we could do the same thing to the Earth, actually, if we're too reckless here. So what we're talking about essentially is an extremely important moment in time, a critical time in our living on this planet as humanity, where perhaps there's nothing more important anyone can do than to bring the light of awareness to these issues and problems that we're having, and to light other people's candles, you know, to help them understand by living it ourselves. And I think this is the real key, that we ourselves will never be able to have the kind of society we would like to have if we're still treating other living beings with violence and cruelty. So that's contained within the talk by Dennis and Elizabeth Kucinich. And I wanted to highlight that because some number of people had commented on that. I'd also like to open up the lines a little bit, and if anyone was listening to Vegan Palooza and you had some interest in one of the other talks, the one by Richard Openlander or Lauren Ornelas or any of the different health people, or some, there was great sessions with restaurateurs and chefs and cooks, and people talking a lot about the importance of a whole foods, unprocessed, plant-based diet, and so forth. And I think all of these things are, you know, there are multiple questions that come up for people, and we didn't have the opportunity for that many questions during Veganpalooza. So I'd love to really just give you the opportunity, if you do have questions or comments about Veganpalooza or about any of these deeper issues or questions, then press star 2 on your phone, and I'd be happy to address them.
Was there new knowledge for you in Veganpalooza and or any really interesting insights that you could share with us?
Thanks, Tara. Right. Yeah, I know what you mean. You know, that's a great question. Was there any new knowledge for me since I've been in this for so long and I've heard so many of the different perspectives that people give in this? And I would say, yes, there was definitely some new knowledge for me on a variety of fronts. A lot of it was reconfirmation and clarification. I don't have my notes right in front of me now from the different sessions, but I remember as I was listening to the interviews and as I was actually interviewing these people, for example, Dr. Alan Goldhammer, I thought he was extremely articulate, even though I have heard him before, but I thought he did a great job of talking about what he called, you know, the pleasure trap and how the food corporations really make a concerted effort to bring fat, sugar, and salt, which he referred to as chemicals. Which I thought that was so interesting because he always referred to them as chemicals, not as fat, sugar, and salt. And then finally he clarified that what he meant when he said there's chemicals are in our food, he meant fat, sugar, and salt. And I said, well, which chemical are you talking about? He said, well, C12, H22O, 11, which I remember from my high school chemistry is sugar. And but I think, you know, this Veganpalooza had a really strong emphasis on the importance of vegans doing what we can to avoid sugar, fat, and salt. From a number of people really emphasized that in a variety of ways. And I think it's easy to sort of forget that and be eating, foods that perhaps aren't all that healthy. And so there was, I thought that was interesting. And then just, of course, hearing from Richard Openlander, for example, who he had some really fascinating insights into the environmental devastation and the causation. Like when I talked about overfishing, and I liked his point. He said, well, it is overfishing, but he said he didn't like to use the word overfishing because that kind of assumes that fishing is okay, but overfishing isn't okay. And what he was saying is, you know, fishing isn't okay at all, which I agree. Yeah, that's a good point. You know, it's we shouldn't do any fishing. So overfishing isn't right. I mean, it's just fishing in general. But the fact is, when I use the word overfishing, I'm talking about the fact that we're plundering the ocean and just pulling out, and the fish don't have a chance now. And so that, to me, that was fascinating. I thought James Sheridan also shared some really good insights into the soy controversy. Michael Clapper did also, and how soy has been, you know, there's this huge pushback about soy that's still going on, where people say that it's carcinogenic, it's got, you know, estrogens in it, and, you know, it's dangerous and all that. And quite a few people talked about that. I mean, Michael Greger, what he said to that was, I thought was very interesting. He just said, well, you know, soy is a bean. So by definition, it's healthy. It's healthy. You know, by definition, it's healthy. And so I thought that was an interesting point. And the fact, of course, is that soy, as we travel around the country, we see literally the entire, virtually all of the agricultural land that's devoted to livestock feed, pretty much devoted to corn and soy. And soy is obviously a grain of choice, or a legume of choice, for ranchers and farmers, because it's a very nutrient dense. I mean, it's very dense in protein and fat, and it's a powerful food. So, like John McDougall says, it's a food that you should eat, kind of like, think of it like almonds or nuts. You know, it's great to have some, but don't just gorge on it too much because it's very rich. And but I thought James Sheridan did a great job of talking about how actually it's been shown in study after study after study that soy is basically beneficial to people, that the longest lived cultures in the world used many of them did actually use soy, like Okinawa. Soy products like tempeh, tofu, miso have been used by cultures that were very, very healthy. And so I thought some of those clarifications were really helpful. There were always, of course, different opinions. Some of the speakers talked about the importance of a raw food diet, which or high raw. Others talked about the importance of cooked foods and eating raw foods being maybe you'd miss out on some goodness, like Michael Greger saying you wouldn't get to have any beans then, really, because you have to cook those. And so, you know, there's always those different emphases that people have. But to me, it was a lot of it was hearing the individual stories of people, the inspiring stories, that and hearing their passion and their and what they're actually doing, you know, to help make a better world. Like Lauren Ornelas with the Food Empowerment Project, talking about not only the compassion for animals, but if we're buying chocolate from human slavery, that's not vegan either, because we should try not to exploit animals, and human beings, we're also animals that can be exploited. And that's wonderful, the work that she's done. I went on to their website and saw this great list they have of all the different chocolate companies and whether or not they are certified. They you know, they're basically certified fair trade, that they're not causing slavery. And there's a lot of them that are even organic ones that you would think would be good, it would be non-slavery, that we're not really sure that they are. So to me, these are all excellent contributions that were made that were good for me to know a little bit more about and be more aware of. And I'd like to actually open up that question also to others. Because it's a great question, Tara, thanks. Noticed during Vegan Palooza any particular insight or a bit of information that was helpful to them, I think it would be interesting to bring it forth. I'll also say something else, since at this point there are no hands up. There were two points in the Vegan Palooza where there were two things that were kind of distressing to me that were said that I had to kind of process a little bit, and may have been distressing to others, depending on who they were. One was during Michael Clapper's presentation, when I asked him if everyone could be a vegan, all the human beings could be vegans, and he basically said, yes, everyone can be vegan, but he said it seems like there are certain people that don't thrive on a vegan diet. And this I thought was very interesting, too, actually, how he said that he thinks that, you know, that our bodies are just geniuses in terms of learning to adapt. You know, so if you have a little kid born here in our society, and from the time they're an infant, their body is being flooded with foods that are high in fat, cholesterol, meat, dairy products, eggs, toxins, and so forth. Their body just learns how to adapt to that, to make all kinds of changes, to make all kinds of, you know, the liver change. He went into some of the actual changes that are made so that the body, isn't destroyed by this kind of a diet. And then at some point, as he said, somebody could, the light could go on, they watch Earthlings or whatever, and they'd say, I'm going vegan. They go vegan, and their body has a hard, you know, when they're maybe 30, 40 years old or whatever, or even 20 or whatever, 50, their body has a hard time, for some reason, adapting to this plant-based diet. It's so different that it can be really hard for them, even though they would like to. Just because it's dug a rut so deeply, you know, most people, their body is delighted and it's like great, you know, but he said he's seen it happen where people just seem to have a hard time adjusting. And then the part that was a little bit hard for me was when he has clients, I guess in some cases they're not interested really in going vegan, but they want to be healthy. They don't want to have whatever it is, diabetes hardening arteries or high blood pressure or whatever, and so he tells them to go vegan, but he knows that, or to move them to a plant-based diet, basically, but he knows that they won't just do that. So I tell them just to eat a piece of flesh no bigger than the size of a deck of cards. And I kind of winced a little bit because I, like, oh, just to tell them to eat some flesh. seems kind of counterproductive. But then he went on to explain. He said, you know, otherwise there would be huge amounts of, you know, if I told them to go vegan, they just wouldn't do it, and that'd be the end of it. They would just go back to eating meat and dairy, you know, large amounts. But what he's found is he tells them just to eat a little piece of, you know, a much smaller piece just once a day, and then once every 2 days, and maybe, you know, twice a week, and then once a week, and then maybe once a month, and, you know, just kind of wean them off of it. That's his strategy, to just, you know, reduce it. So that was one point that I thought was maybe could be clarified, although I think he did a pretty good job explaining it. But I think some people said, well, maybe he's not a vegan. You know, he is a vegan, and he's definitely a vegan himself, and he's promoting veganism. He thinks it's urgent to promote veganism, but he also thinks that with certain people, for him as an MD, when he has a practice and they come in and they want to be healthier, if he can get them to reduce their meat and go off of it, that he will encourage them to do that rather than just say, no, it's all or nothing. You know, he thinks it's important and helpful to do somewhat of a gradual approach. And then the other one was with James Cromwell. You probably heard that, perhaps, if you listen to that one, where he talks a lot about being a vegan how important it is and everything else. And at one point I asked him a question about, is it difficult to be a vegan in Hollywood and so forth? And he said, no, it's not difficult. I'm the kind of person that, you know, I tell people my thoughts and my feelings, and I live my life the way I want to live it. But then he said, well, there have been a few times that I've been traveling, and I couldn't get anything to eat, you know. So he said, I got an egg. He said, I would get an egg, and I would have that. And, you know, and again, I kind of winced, and I was thinking, oh, I wish he wouldn't have gotten an egg, you know. But I guess what he was saying was he just felt like he really was, you know, in a place where he just, you know, he wanted to have it because he felt like he wouldn't be able to function properly without it. He just couldn't get proper food other than that. But then he went on, I thought, in a quite a beautiful way. It's really quite, I thought it was very insightful the way he articulated it and talked about how one of the things that veganism really does teach us is not to be a slave of our appetites and to be disciplined and to be aware and conscious of what we're eating all the time and how we're living. And he said, because, you know, he said he said this a few times, you know, veganism is not about perfection. You can't be a perfect vegan. You can learn, and it's not about judgment. You know, not judge other people. Not judge yourself. Do the best you can and go on. So I think those are healthy sentiments, basically. And but again, I think personally, I wish he wouldn't have said that, just because I think it a little bit leaves the door open for people just to say, okay, well, I'm having a hard time, I'm going to have some eggs because James Cromwell does, and he was on Vegan Palooza. I certainly don't want to give that impression. I think it's important to strive as best we can. Really not, you know, to be conscious in our foods and not to eat animal foods, you know, but again, it's not about perfection or judgment and so forth. So those are things that I think we all have to deal with on some level, with ourselves, with others, and I think it's healthy to have a conversation about it as well. All right, we've got a few hands up here. Let's see. The number is 804-214-8250. I'm unmuting you. I'm not sure who you are, but go ahead.
Good evening, Will. This is Grace.
Oh, Grace. Hi, Grace. How are you? Good to have you with us.
Hi. Yes, I'm very grateful and very blessed, like Lily. This is just such an awesome opportunity to be with you and other like-minded individuals. Thank you.
Oh, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
The most important thing is I wanted to offer gratitude and thanks to Steve for all of his dedication and all the work he's done over the last couple of years. And that's just amazing.
Right.
And to congratulate him on his success and his busyness with his other endeavors, and to thank him and wish him the best.
Great. Thank you for doing that. I'll tell him. He's not on the call right now, but I'll let him know. Thanks.
Yeah. And then, also, I know, but well, it has gotten kind of late. But it was funny because I've really been interested in hearing you talk more about the victims, the perpetrators, and the bystanders. I know it's deep in the book on page 272, and it's gotten late in this call with all the technical difficulties. I myself called in several times to get to. No constant crackling.
Right.
But maybe next time, or maybe next time there'll be more other things to talk about. But I really enjoyed this part of the book, and
okay.
I've been having, just kind of questions, just wanting to hear more about that.
Right. Yeah. Okay. If we have a little time here today, I will address that, and we can put it on the agenda for next call, which will be in September. The third Thursday is the 20th. The 19th. So thanks for mentioning that, Grace. And I think personally, I do think it's one of the most important things to think about in this whole thing.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Great. All right. I'll make a note of that. Thanks so much,
awesome.
And appreciate your being with us. All right.
Yes, and hugs to Madeline, please. Hugs to
Right. Okay. Yep, I got that. Thanks.
Awesome. Bye.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks so much. That was Grace. And let's see, we have a hand up here, Tara. Go ahead,
Hi.
Tara.
Yeah, I wanted to address what you were talking about earlier, about how people say that, you know, they just can't be a vegan, and that, you know, it doesn't make them feel good, or they can't process the food properly. And I think it's really important to address that, because I have heard that in older people where they say, I just can't eat all those vegetables. You know, it tears up my stomach, they say. And the truth of the matter is that it's actually an unhealthy state that allows them to just process bland food constantly, and, you know, the state of the intestines and everything. And it's important for doctors to say, you know, well, let's modify that vegan diet. Let's grind that food up so you can process it. It's the nutrients that will be beneficial for you. So not just kind of caving in to people saying, well, you know, it doesn't make me feel good, because it is very different. Sometimes health can be mistaken for, you know, not really feeling well. And also, someone mentioned to me that there's our brains become, and our systems become so overstimulated from eating meat that we feel that it is normal. And when we're
right.
understimulated, then we feel like there's actually something wrong when it's not. And then there might be a period of that until the body starts really feeling excited and thriving on such a nutrient-dense diet.
Yes, thank you, Tara, for those points. I think that's really important. And I encourage everybody to listen to Alan Goldhammer's talk. He goes into this a little bit also, and he talks about, somebody asked him a question about seeing doctors, and he, you know, the problem is, I think, Tara, what you're alluding to, is most people, when they're having a health problem, they go to their doctors, and most doctors, of course, are not vegan, and most of them are not very favorably oriented towards veganism, so they will typically encourage people away from a plant-based diet. That is changing, fortunately, as they're being educated more. As we talked about Kaiser Permanente now and so forth, it's beginning to change. But especially not only among MDs, but among alternative health practitioners, very often they will say, well, you just, you know, eat a little bit of meat and chicken. And, of course, then the people do feel better, and everybody's happy. You know, they're happy. The doctor's happy. Everybody thinks, yeah, he was right that time. And but the actual fact is that the cleansing stops. Their body is, of course, compromised ultimately by this, but essentially, of course, the main problem is the cruelty to the animals. And so what Dr. Goldhammer said is try to find a doctor who's not an idiot. I thought that was great. Just find a doctor who's not an idiot. He doesn't have to be a vegan, but just someone who's not an idiot, who basically understands that you can get all your nutrients from a plant-based diet, from plant-based sources, and who will work with you. And in a plant-based diet that will really optimally, you know, help you. And I think, again, this is another opportunity. We need more people like Sassy Knudsen and like Veronique and a lot of you, actually, who are working as vegan coaches, helping, you know, coach people. You can, you know, have websites and blogs, and we can just educate people that this is a situation. You know, all of us have been born into a society where we've been forced to eat a diet that's in many ways pushed us in a certain direction to accommodate to it. And when we go, like anything else, when we become more healthy, it may upset our system for a while. And think about these poor cows that are forced to eat all this grain and forced to eat meat. And you know, if they were put on a suddenly unhealthy diet, they actually wouldn't do well. They have to also go back again. So thanks for sharing that. I appreciate that. That was great. Natasha and Luca, you have your hand up, so I'll go ahead and unmute you. Okay, there you are. You're with us.
Hi, Will. Hi, Steve. Hi, all. Thank you so much, Will and Steve, for the Palooza. It was absolutely wonderful. We just wanted to make special note. Was it Karen Davis, the lady who spoke so passionately about the chickens?
Yes, that's Karen Davis. Right. Absolutely. She's fantastic.
Yeah, we found, everyone was wonderful, but she was quite striking. Her passion and her articulation of what the chickens endure was very special. And then also Norm Phelps and his appreciation of Karen. And he was really quite emotional, and that made us quite emotional, actually. His sort of respect for her was lovely.
Yes, you're right about that. I won't say anything more, but yeah, go ahead.
Sure. And then just on the clapper, we listened to the interview, but we must have missed the bit about him and the flesh and the meat eater and what have you. I think that's where cleansing comes into play because, and by cleansing I mean sort of, you know, an enema or a colima or a colonic, because
right.
So many people have so much toxicity in them from the SAD diet, and sometimes, you know, they really need to kickstart to release that so that they can actually, you know, begin to change over the diet and the palate and what have you. So that's an interesting one. With Cromwell, when he dropped the egg bomb, we felt so sorry for you. We thought, oh, God, Will's probably thinking, what is everyone going to think?
Yeah, I know.
I definitely
was a bomb. I wasn't expecting that at all. But
No, we could tell. You handled it very, very well, better than we may well have. I thought I heard one thing else during that call, but it could have been a bad line. Did he say, as I'm speaking, I'm looking down at my leather shoes? He didn't say that.
He did say that. Right. Right. He said that exactly the same moment. He said, I will occasionally eat egg, and then he went right on, and the next sentence out of his mouth was, and now, as I'm looking down right now, I'm seeing that I am wearing leather shoes. I wish I could be like Moby and wear sneakers everywhere I go, you know, but I, you know, they just don't go well with my suit, so sometimes I do wear leather, you know. So he was kind of, and then he went on to say, it's not about being perfect, it's about doing the best you can. And then he talked, but then he did talk about the importance of discipline and living one's life without just being pushed around by one's desires and so forth. And so I appreciated that part of it. But yeah, I was really surprised because he always talks about being a vegan, and people think of him, everyone thinks of him as a passionate, outspoken vegan. So he considers himself that as well. But that was, obviously he feels that he has to sometimes a little bit, you know, kind of do something else. And so there it is. You know, that's what it is.
Yeah, you did really well. I thought everything else he said was wonderful. He articulated himself beautifully, loved what he was saying, and obviously found it somewhat hypocritical. I thought, look, you've been a vegan 18, you surely could got a new pair of shoes. You are a Hollywood celebrity after all.
Right, exactly. That's it, you know, because he had been a vegan for, like you say, for 18 years, and people look at him, you know, and that's one of the things that vegan, you know, if someone says I'm a vegan, then they will quickly, a lot of people will quickly check to see if you're wearing a leather belt or whatever and say, oh, you're not consistent there, you know. So I think it does somewhat damage the possibilities because nowadays I think there really are shoes that you can get that are not leather, for the most part, there are. But, you know, there are cases of certain shoes or perhaps certain things that are really hard to find without leather. I know I've heard people talk about the difficulty of getting leather, non-leather, guitar straps or non-leather, certain things, whatever. I'm not sure what they are exactly, but there's a number of things that are difficult. But there are more and more vegan baseball gloves and vegan shoes and vegan alternative to almost everything. So I think, but again, what he was saying is that, don't sit there and be the vegan police too much. You know, just be glad that he's that much, and that's great, you know. If everybody was like you, that's one of the things I say quite a bit. If someone is mostly there, I say, well, if everybody was like you, this whole world would be a much better place, wouldn't it? You know, and it's a journey. We're all on a journey moving in that direction, basically.
Absolutely, Will. Thank you so much once again.
Thank you, Will.
All righty. Great to hear from you both, Natasha and Luca. Thanks.
Bye.
All right. Thanks. Yeah, bye-bye. Okay, well, this is really... really, really, really interesting. I think these are excellent points, and I'm glad that we were able to talk about those a little bit. And there is, I think, one more comment, hand up here. So I think this is. Go ahead. You're unmuted. It says anonymous. Yeah.
Hi, that must be me. Hi, Will. This is Veronique.
Oh, hi. Yes, Veronique. Yes.
Hi. Sorry, I know I always have my phone as restricted, so it never shows up.
Right.
First of all, I wanted to thank you so much for another incredible vegan palooza. You and Steve have done a wonderful job. I have a lot to listen to. I haven't been able to really listen to most of it, having so much to do. But one touch I really liked was the fact that there were vegan singers, vegan musicians in between the calls. Playing.
Right.
I love that touch. I thought it was wonderful. I didn't even know Elvis Costello was vegan, so that was a nice surprise.
Right.
And yeah, and really nice touch, and I really appreciate that. The one doc I really listened to that I was able to listen to was John Pierre, who's always a delight. And I wanted to say something about you're mentioning the soy controversy earlier. I'm glad you did, because I have encountered a lot of vegans, particularly on Facebook, who are still buying into the propaganda against soy. And every time I have to literally, plug in my article about soy from my website, and where my article, what I did is I took the research done by Dr. Greger and Dr. Barnard, and sort of came up with a distilled version of it.
Good.
So it's been really frustrating at times, because a lot of people really buy into it and all this Western Price Foundation nonsense. And it is very hard to get people to understand that this is not, soy is not the enemy. And
right.
That and vegans are not responsible for the destruction of the rainforest, because there's a lot of scapegoating of vegans as being, you guys eat soy, therefore you tear down the rainforest, and well, no, not really. it's all the soy that goes through feed the cattle that you guys eat. So not really accurate here. But I did
exactly.
I did have to respond to a lot of that recently. For some reason, this comes up a lot lately. And
right.
Then the other thing I wanted to thank you is mentioning Dr. Goldhammer, which is a fascinating person to listen to. And I like what Ever said about, the struggling with cravings and versus the fact that, we should be able to thrive on a vegan diet. And one of the things I always emphasize, and I really, really, major reason I became a health coach, is that we are herbivores, and that there is no doubt in my mind that we are designed for a plant-based diet, and that cravings don't equal biology. People confuse cravings with biology. They think that, oh, I need meat, therefore I'm going to be an omnivore. No, you're addicted, therefore that's why you feel you need to eat meat. But it has nothing to do with your biology. It has everything to do with being addicted to a drug. And being addicted to that drug since you were born. It's very hard to get through this through people's minds, but more and more people are getting it, I think. And it's just, there is such a pervasive belief in society that we are omnivores and even carnivores. And this is obviously not based on science at all. And most people don't even know the difference physiologically between a carnivore, an omnivore, herbivore. They don't look at how we are built, how our bodies are. And they just buy into what they've been told. It is really pervasive. And I think this is one of the last myths we need to fight, we need to debunk. It's that myth that we are omnivores. I mean, if you take, his name escapes me right now, the omnivore's dilemma.
Oh, yeah, Michael Pollan, right.
Michael Pollan, thank you. Just the title is wrong. The title itself is incorrect. The title is a lie, which he perpetuates, and which a lot of people like him perpetuate. And I don't care about their so-called good intentions. Michael Pollan is the one who actually called chicken stupid recently in an article
Let me just talk about that a little bit. Thanks. Those are great questions. We're getting a little bit close to the end of our time here, so I want to begin to wrap up. But thanks, Veronique. Those are great points. I want to respond to that, what you're just saying. So is that okay? Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. Thanks. So you know, this point Veronique just made up was talking about, I think, is very important, the whether we're omnivores by design or whatever. And a couple of things. You know, Dr. Goldhammer did talk about the endorphins that the hormones in the brain or whatever, the substances in the brain that cause us addiction and pleasure, dopamine, specifically dopamine. He was talking about the dopamine rush. That comes from, especially from food and from sex, but, because when we eat, these are behaviors that we should be engaging in, but especially fat and salt and so forth, and sugar. And I think there really is this dilemma that we have as human beings born into this particular society where we're forced from the time we're little kids to eat meat and dairy products and eggs. It's almost, in a sense, like forcing a little kid as soon as they're born to start smoking cigarettes or something, you know, and then everybody's smoking, and then the body craves it, and people try to stop it. It's hard to stop. There's a dopamine rush associated with it, and a literal physical craving and addiction. But it's just passed on through the generations. And sure, there's alcohol. I mean, there's tobacco companies getting very wealthy on this. And so the situation is that it's not tobacco. I mean, I guess in some cases, kids are almost forced into smoking from a very young age, but for sure with meat and dairy products and eggs, with the animal foods, that is what's done. And for sure, it happens. Kids are getting dairy from the time they're tiny, and meat also. And so these are substances that the body is forced to accommodate and change itself to. And that's what essentially causes not only a physical addiction but a psychological addiction. It's connected with being loved by one's parents. And there's also the ritualized behavior. So we're talking about a heavy-duty addiction. I mean, we're talking about an addiction that's emotional, social, psychological, and physical, and has to do with one's self-identity and has huge sociological ramifications of acceptance in the group and love by one's tribe and one's family. And so from that perspective, I think it really is almost a miracle, as you've probably heard me say before, that anyone actually is able to go vegan in our society and completely free ourselves from this. It's a great victory, really, when it happens in a deep way. And in addition to that, I think it's important to realize that we can actually see, and sometimes I think this might be something to raise with people who say that we're omnivores, just to ask them, Well, do you think cows are omnivores? Are cows naturally omnivores? And most people, I mean, anyone who has any sense at all will say, no, they're herbivores. They're designed for plants. But the fact is, they're eating huge amounts of meat and fish and so forth in order to fatten them up. And again, to point out to people that it's not in the cow's interest that they are being fed a diet of meat. It's in the interest of those who are exploiting them to fatten them up so they can use them for their own, for their interest. The owners of the cows are feeding them foods that's in the interest of the owners, not in the interest of the cows. And to point out to people that it's the same situation with us. It's in the interest of those who are controlling us that we eat meat and dairy products and eggs. It's not in the interest of it's not in our interest that we are. It's in our interest to be eating a diet that gives us vibrant health and clarity of mind. But if you are feeding people meat, dairy products, and eggs, you're feeding them foods that are guaranteed not only to make them less healthy in the long run, and this has become really clear that diabetes and obesity and osteoporosis and autoimmune diseases of various kinds, the real big money makers, cancers and heart disease and so forth, really are absolutely connected with diets of animal products, but also the mental clarity and mental diseases as well, and then also just the psychological shutting down that goes along with it, so that allows people to rationalize warfare and incredible injustice because they're participating in it. So on every level, it's in the interest of those who are exploiting the meat, dairy products eaters to give them these foods to profit a wealthy elite, to give them the rationalizations that trick them into continuing to eat the foods, and to point out to them that for us as vegans, we are not on the other side. We're not their enemies. We're on the same side. It's really animal agriculture and the system of violence towards animals and the ecosystems, which is also victimizing them as well. And so this is where we get into, actually, interestingly enough, into the question that Grace was talking about, this section in the World Peace Diet at the end of the book where I have a sub-chapter called Victims, Perpetrators, and Bystanders. And the basic idea that I think is very important to understand is that in any crime that's publicly committed, there are always these three roles that are being enacted. There's the victim who's being harmed, there's the perpetrator, someone who's doing that, and there's someone who sees it. And the point, I think, the relevance for our situation with veganism and with the cultural problems that we're having is that the victims and the perpetrators in this situation that we have with animals and the massive violence by perpetrators, by meat eaters, basically dairy eaters and egg eaters and fur wearers and so forth, these perpetrators are the consumers. They're just buying what they're told to buy. The perpetrators are not the actual slaughterhouse workers. I mean, sure, the slaughterhouse workers and the fur farm workers are the perpetrators. They're the ones that are doing the actual electroshocking and killing of animals. But they are just hired guns, and they're doing the will of the assassins, who are the consumers, who make the decision and have the will to cause violence toward another being. Even though they're not conscious of it, that's what they're doing when they go in. And obviously, a perpetrator is a perpetrator when they go into a McDonald's and order a burger. That order will cause a demand in the system, and somewhere because of that demand, an animal will be confined and killed in order to replace and bring more burgers into the system and more chicken nuggets and so forth. So the perpetrators and the victims are locked in a struggle, in a very pathetic, unending, you know, in the Buddhist tradition we talk about samsara, the unending cycle of violence, that violence breeds more violence, violence breeds ignorance, ignorance breeds violence. They both come out of desensitization and create suffering. And the idea is that this cycle will never end until there's an awakening. And so the bystander, in a sense, in a situation, the only bystander in a situation like this is someone who is not being a perpetrator. In our society, 8% perhaps are perpetrators. They're eating meat. They're paying for meat, dairy products, and eggs, and only 2%, a tiny minority, are actually bystanders. So it's a very difficult situation for everyone, in the sense that the victims and perpetrators are both victims of the system. The perpetrators committing the violence, but then they are also victims of their own violence and are desensitized and are dumbed down and are harmed physically and psychologically by their actions and don't really know what they're doing. They're asleep. They're conditioned by the cultural hypnotic trance. The only ones with any power in the situation are the witnesses. And in a sense, we become, when we go vegan, we become like the Buddha nature of an individual. You know, there's a lot of, the idea is that there is an enlightened element within the consciousness of any human being. And even though we may be acting in ways that are contrary to our own wisdom and being selfish and greedy and violent and deceitful and so forth, there's a witness inside of us, a witness who is of the awareness of wisdom and compassion, the Buddha, our own true nature, our Buddha nature, or in the Christian tradition, perhaps the Christ nature. That is our true nature, and if we can, instead of as individuals, be listening to this programming and to the dopamine addiction that's always pushing us to do it again, and the fear really, which underlies all of it, which is I want to fit in and not change. I want to be the way I always was. Then the vegan Buddha nature, which is nonviolence and compassion, our true nature. The inner witness, which is actually acted out by us as vegans in the outer world as being the witnesses. We see this. So the whole key to the whole situation is the vegans. We are the only ones that are going to stop the problem. And the key, the onus, in a sense, is on us. The burden is on us to be skillful in our witnessing, to act in ways that allow, in some ways, and encourage these blind perpetrators from committing the violence that they're committing, and in some ways to draw them out. And there's this wonderful metaphor, I'm going on too long here, but there's this wonderful metaphor in the Buddhist tradition where they talk about the three yanas. You know, the three yanas are the three vehicles. There's the Hinayana, the Mahayana, and the Vajrayana, for example. They talk about these different yanas, and they're the different vehicles of teaching. And one they call, and the idea is that there are all these people in a house, and the house is burning down. And if you go to the house and yell at the people and say, "Hey, everybody, you know, you're in a house that's burning down. Get out of the house." They laugh at you. They think you're crazy. They think you're stupid. They think, "What are you talking about? The house isn't burning. Everything's fine. We're happy." They don't realize that the house is burning down. So that's the situation, okay? We are outside the house. We see the house is burning. We see that they're eating meat. We see it's destroying their health, destroying the environment, destroying animals. We go and yell and say, "The house is burning. You know, you know, get out of the house. Get out of that behavior." But they laugh. They say, "Oh, you're just one of those uppity vegans. You know, what are you talking? You don't know anything. You don't know what's good. I enjoy some bacon here." You know, so what the teachings are, the yanas. They have the goat cart and they have the ox cart. You know, the different and they're just toys. They're toys that then the Buddha, looking at the people in the house that's burning, instead of telling them that they should come out of the burning house because they won't listen, the Buddha brings this goat cart and he says, "Look at this. This is a fun little cart you can play with." And he starts playing with the goat cart out in the yard, trying to get everybody interested. And if they get interested, they'll come out of the house and they'll say, "Oh, yeah, let's come out and play in that go-kart," you know. And so in a way, that's what we're doing, that's the Hinayana. The Mahayana is an ox cart. It's a bigger one. It's a bigger toy, basically. and to try to just, you know, entice the people out of the burning house. And so as vegans, I think, you know, part of it, of being an effective witness, is realizing that if you just yell at the people and say, you know, "What are you doing is wrong, it's crazy," we have to entice them out. "Hey, come on out here. We've got some delicious tempeh, and we've got some really yummy things, and you'll be healthier if you come out and eat what we're eating. It's so much better. It's so much good." You know, we're just trying to get them out by enticing them, because that, in a sense, what they call that is upaya, which is skillful means, you know, to be skillful. Because if we want to be effective witnesses, once we have an awakening, in order to help other beings, then we need to develop our intuition and learn to act in ways that are actually skillful in the situation. And that doesn't mean that we have to be self-righteous and just yell at the people and tell them they're wrong and stupid and be pure. The idea is to just somehow create situations that draw them forth, that draw them out, And that's what I think we see happening, you know, in the movement. We see it happening more and more with creating sanctuaries where people can see the beauty of the animals and say, wow, that's great, and creating delicious cuisine, people in beautiful clothes that are vegan, and all these other things. And some people might complain and say, well, you know, that's kind of appealing to people's self-interest. You know, going vegan, you shouldn't care about the self-interest. You should just care about the animals. And, of course, that's true, but hopefully they'll get there. Once they come out of the burning house and they're playing with the goat cart for a while, they'll look back and go, oh, my God, that house was burning. Man, thank you for getting me out of there. I didn't realize. You know, that's the idea, but you got to get them out somehow. And so I think if we can find ways that help bring people out of the burning house, then we'll begin to, once they get out and they're doing it maybe just because they don't want to have diabetes or obesity or whatever it is, or have better skin, you know, and so forth, or live longer, those kinds of things, then plant seeds will deepen their motivation, tell them to look back and see the house that was burning and understand you never want to go back in there again. I mean, that's insane. It's not healthy. All right. Well, now we're at 7:30 our time, Pacific time, 10:30 other people's time. And I really do apologize again that we did lose a little time there in the beginning, but I also don't want to penalize those of you who need to get to bed soon and so forth. So, I don't see any other hands up. I'm working in my own consciousness with the idea of veganism as the ultimate spiritual path, and I want to talk more about that, I think, next time, and other ideas that you may have or questions that you may have. I want to encourage everyone to have a look at the August 2013 resources for the World Peace Diet Circle, which are in the inbox of your membership site. I have two quotes at the top, which I'll close with. One is by Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. He said this wonderful quote, which I think is one of the best ever. Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about the things that matter. I'll say it again. Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about the things that matter. I think that's the main thing, is that we not be silent about the things that matter, that we find ways to speak up about these things, to be effective witnesses, to bring the message to perpetrators in a way that draws them out of that behavior in some way, to plant seeds that help that to happen. I think that's the greatest gift we can give ourselves and animals. And, of course, to take time every day to enjoy your life, to enjoy the beauty of nature, and to know that we are part of an awakening here on this planet. And even though it may look dark, I think there are seeds of light that are being planted all the time that are not talked about in the mass media. The other quote by John Rappaport is, groups begging at the door of entrenched power for crumbs are going nowhere. That is no revolution. That is no liberation. It's a pathetic stage play. So the whole idea of groups that are sort of mercenary groups that are, you know, basically just in it for the money and working with the industries, begging for crumbs at the door of these established organizations and the established power structure is really ultimately not going to go anywhere. It's really, the power is with us, the people, as volunteers and as working, you know, individually in our lives at the grassroots level, bringing this change and the awakening to our friends and colleagues and through the internet and through our phone calls and interactions and so forth, that we create the momentum. It's really with us, and that's, I think, something to always remember. There's a link to my article and really fantastic stuff happening in China. These great couple of short videos. The World Peace Diet is really big in China right now, especially in Taiwan. I think these are from Taiwan. So there's some interesting things there. The book is getting translated now. It's finally getting published, it looks like, perhaps soon in French. Thanks to the work of Stefan, who's just been wonderful, and working on that. And a lot of other very interesting articles here about the whole vegan movement and how it's growing. So there's great things happening, a lot of wonderful interactions I saw and questions and things happening in the online in our community forums. And I just want to thank all of you for participating in those and sharing with each other. I think it's very rich to be able to do that. I'll definitely keep everyone posted about what steps are going to be taking over the next few weeks as we find another form for this. Maybe we'll find a service that isn't so crackly And it's usually not there like this, but for some reason it was, I guess, tonight. And otherwise, I just want to thank all of you so much. As you probably all got the email 2 days ago, Madeline and I celebrated our 20th wedding anniversary, and I just thank from the bottom of my heart this beautiful being who's sharing my life. It feels like we share one life together, a larger life, and we work together, and she is a great inspiration and a great help to me on every level, from the both physical to the psychological and spiritual and emotional. And I think it's wonderful to help each other bring this message and know that we have a mission together. And the other thing I mentioned in the email was that I just had my 60th birthday yesterday, actually, and some people thought that was surprising that I didn't look that old. And I think that's one of the things that I certainly don't feel that way. And in many ways, I think I have as much energy and vitality as I did when I was 20, and probably more. And so it's just a great side benefit of compassion for others. I think we do typically find our own physical body and mind working better on a plant-based diet. And I think that's part of the great teaching that as we bless others, we will be blessed. So I wish all of you an enormously productive and abundant three and a half weeks till our next call. I'll keep in touch with you. Thanks so much for supporting us, for Veganpalooza, supporting the vegan cause in your own lives, the animals I know. Thank you for that. And a big love from Madeline, too. And we just want, as we go forth, know that each one of us, as we move forward into our lives, are guided by our inner spiritual wisdom and by our intuition to act in ways that are not only in our own interests and the interests of those who are close to us, but really are in the interest of everyone. And that as we do the best we can to bless others, we will find that our life together on this earth is improving all the time. Thank you all so much for lighting each other's candles and the candles of many others, for being the light and for opening to the beauty of this earth as we've been talking about, and look forward to staying in touch. Thanks again for joining us. And much love to you all, and I am now going to do my best to play the lead-out music and talk to you all later. Thank you. Thanks again for joining us this time, and let's stay in touch. Thanks. That wasn't it.